From the east side to the west, this is From the Land, the Cleveland Sports and COVID Positive Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Gerber. I'm COVID positive. And tonight, we talk through another banged up white satin winning Browns weekend, the new look Cavs, NFL Week 15 storylines, and our starting to heat up Bowl Pick'em Challenge. Off the field, we dial up our holiday movie spectacular in the final week of our holiday extravaganza. I am joined tonight by two of the best ever, my COVID negative co-hosts, Phil Danko and Chuck Rambaldo are here. Fellas, Christmas is a week away. Scale of 1 to 5, 1 being Kris Kringle, 5 being Scrooge, before he is haunted in a pretty terrifying way. How is your Christmas spirit holding up?
Oh man, Christmas spirit! I'm all the way at Saint Nick, man. Is that a one? I forget what end of the scale that was. Yeah, I'm a one.
I've been on one for well over a month, though I have yet to buy any gifts or wrap anything. It does not mean I am not feeling the season. It is, as it gets closer and closer, it's getting better and better in this house with the little kitties. They're getting super excited, especially Chip. So I'm at a one, and I'll probably be at a one, to be honest, till about February.
Nice.
Yeah. There are barely any months where Chuck does not have Christmas cheer through the entire year. Yeah. It's like the baseball season, and that's it.
Chuck is Buddy the Elf, man. He is Buddy. I love it.
You and Whitney are a perfect pair, man. It would not work if one was like super Christmassy and the other one wasn't. That would not work out. I'm at about like a 3.5, but trending in the right direction. I'm starting to feel better. My wife is sick. So we're kind of missing out a little bit on the holidays, but hopefully on an upswing and things will start getting better, because I want to be excited about Christmas. We did get a bunch of snow today in Ludington, so it's starting to feel a little bit more like the holidays. But enough of this Christmas jabber. Let's move on. Start at home. And let's start by taking a big picture look at Cleveland sports and our Cleveland fandom, because last week felt different than most weeks. We have already talked a lot about the rash of serious injuries the Browns suffered this year that only got worse as more guys headed to the IR during the last week, and there were more key injuries during yesterday's game. Last week also delivered the news that the Cavs were losing Darius Garland and Evan Mobley for 6 to 8 weeks. People also may have already forgotten that the Guardians' season was hobbled by losing months of starts from their elite starting rotation. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I don't think you guys believe in curses. Am I wrong? And if it's not a curse, didn't the last week make it a lot harder to explain in a logical way?
I don't know if I believe in curses, but it feels like there's been a shit cloud of injuries over our Cleveland professional sports franchises for this whole year. And it feels like it's getting contagious, like it's spreading from one franchise to the next.
Oh, it's like a virus. Yeah, it's not a curse. It's a virus. It's like Walking Dead shit. Okay.
Yeah. It's just as terrifying as The Walking Dead, because we dedicate so much time and our enjoyment and our satisfaction is based around these teams. And one of them's handling the storm pretty well. We'll see how, it lends for the Cavs, that the season's a long one. So if they could tread water and win games they're supposed to once they get their players back, then they make their run, hopefully. But all these seasons start to feel the same. Like, who's out? How long are they out for? When are they coming back? How will it affect where they are in the standings? So not a curse. I think it is like it's more of a virus.
This is like when the Browns had like staph infection in the locker room or something like that. It's awful.
Yeah.
I want to say that I do not believe in curses. What part of my life, forget the last year, what part of my life as a Cleveland sports fan would point me in a different direction? The Maloik has been set on this town with our professional teams.
Good. Very good.
Some way, somehow, right? Like I don't want to say I believe in curses, because I feel like, I don't. I don't believe in that. But maybe I should, because outside of one gigantic championship on the broad shoulders of LeBron James, what other part of my rooting history in Cleveland would lead me to not believe in a curse? Star running backs are fumbling, star quarterbacks are driving down the field on us, World Series losses in the bottom of the last inning or an extra innings and all this stuff. The injury bug, though, in this last year does seem like I like Chuck's analogy to a virus. It's something has happened. Something has happened in this town. I don't know. Maybe it's in the water. Maybe it's airborne. Maybe we all have it. Like in Walking Dead, spoiler alert. Maybe we all have
spoiler
it.
Alert. Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Like the first season of The Walking Dead.
The show ended 6 years ago, let alone began 10 years ago. So yeah, maybe we all have it. And then, at a certain point, once you're excelling in your sport, it comes to fruition and you become injured. So this is not a positive start to a COVID positive show. Come on.
It's not.
Man.
I'll tell you what, I'm not somebody who would believe in a curse, but I'm running out of ways to explain it otherwise. And I would add in also the fact that even if there was a curse, I thought for sure it was lifted when LeBron won and the Cavs took home that championship. There's no way to explain this, man. It's just the sheer amount of injuries and injuries to key people. We're going to get to it, but my gosh, the Browns offensive line is ruined. How does that happen? Like, I know everybody has injuries. Everybody suffers, but how is this continuing to pile on this team? And then the Cavs get it. And it's like, man, they just started to kind of round into shape and really start to play. And they lose two of their best guys. And poor Darius Garland should wear a helmet when he plays. That dude's face gets broken like every season. That poor guy. I'm out of answers. I'm out of explanations, but I'm not out of feeling like something weird is happening in Cleveland. And I would recommend that all professional athletes in Cleveland mask and quarantine for the rest of this season, man, because I don't want to see any more of this. All right. Well, let's move on to something more positive. Thanks for taking that little walk with me. We'll move on to Skid Marks, our weekly look at the Brown and Orange road to the Super Bowl. I damn near shit myself, Doug. That's David Njoku perfectly summing up another ridiculous Browns win. The Browns, who no longer resemble the team that started the season, held on when the Bears couldn't and got an improbable 20-17 win. Browns are now 9-5, a game ahead of the we're not f***ing dead yet Bengals, and now two games up on the man we f***ing suck Steelers. So give me your 60-second take on yesterday's shit show win.
All right. Well, first of all, I think we got to get David Njoku on the show. He might be encroaching on your skid marks joke. Like, I think he should be like a spokesperson for the show. After that comment,
yeah,
right?
I think you're right.
That's fantastic. All right. My 60. So I'm going to start it with this. And you kind of alluded to it already. At what point do the injuries become too much to overcome? Apparently not this weekend. So far, so good. So on a day when the Browns offense could not run the ball, 29 total yards of rushing in a game, they continue to suffer drive killing penalties all game. They continue to suffer injury after injury to the offensive line. They gifted the Bears 14 points on the back of three Flacco interceptions in a game that really seemed like he could have thrown six. We saw an injury plagued next man up defense step up and dominate all game long. They forced the Bears into 8-3 and outs. The most important coming with about a minute 50 left in the game. And when it was tied at 17, which set Flacco and the offense up to drive down the field and leading to what became a Dustin Hopkins game-winning field goal. So the injury question I posed is probably, unfortunately, going to continue to be the theme over the remaining weeks of the season. It seems so anyway. But I think with Flacco slinging it and Njoku catching it and the defense dominating the game, the Browns should have a chance to win every remaining regular season game and any postseason game they find themselves in. How about that?
That is the Christmas spirit.
Wasn't. Oh, thanks. That's much better than this. Got it. Hey, Grinch Mimosa, everybody.
Look at that.
Grinch Whitney. Mimosa. My gosh, you want an MVP?
Yeah, Chuck has stumbled upon an extra layer of the show.
Yeah, got exactly.
I have a bartender.
Yeah, I know. Wake up, Tammy. Quit faking sick.
She's so bad. It's going to start out like it did last year. Last week wasn't pretty. Didn't have to be. It felt like I was watching a preseason game in mid-December. The 12-man penalties, the pre-snap stuff was ugly. So many.
Forgot about the 12-man penalties twice in a row.
Twice in three plays.
Yeah.
Sorry,
and
Chuck.
Then that's okay. Then the turnovers, three picks. I said could have been five. Phil had could have been six. So I guess mine's a little more festive. But yesterday, you saw the value of Joe Flacco. Any other Browns quarterback would have crawled in a hole after throwing multiple picks, but not that dude. He just kept slinging it. And that's a big boy quarterback, man. And it's been f***ing forever since we've seen that in Cleveland. Fourth quarter, Flacco, 11 for 13, 212 yards, doing it with no offensive line. I'll say David Njoku belongs in the Pro Bowl. He had 200-yard receivers in the same game for the first time since 2013. But none of that happens without the defense. They were fantastic. They kept them in the game. Tomlinson blew up the interior of the Bears line for most of that game. The backup safeties played great. Greg Newsome played physical and gritty. And JOK should be a Pro Bowler as well. That guy is so versatile and explosive, covers multiple positions, can stop the run, blitz from basically anywhere, and is violent on contact. Four times this year, the Browns have pulled out victories when there was an 85% chance of loss. So I'm just going to say, enjoy the ride, boys, because we are witnessing a winning culture being built and put in place by backups, third stringers, and practice squad players. And maybe it all goes to shit, but this season has felt really special. Like, I haven't witnessed something like, because it never goes this way for us and for the Browns. I think we're watching something special. And again, can all go to shit next week and the week after that, and they might miss the playoffs or they might get blown out 63-0. But it's been a fun ride. I'm just saying, it's been a fun ride, and I'm just trying to enjoy it and turn off the side of my brain that says, oh, somebody else is going to get hurt. Something else is going to go wrong. It can, and they still overcome it.
I don't have a ton to add from what you guys are saying, other than this is the flip side of the curse we just talked about. Like, all this shit is going wrong and the Browns are winning. And I love what you're saying about, like, we're watching that winning culture be built. Like, yes, that's what's happening here. I mean, they're finding ways to win when nobody thinks they should, when statistically it's, you know, stacked against them at the point in the game. My gosh, it's a lot of fun. I would focus on Flacco, the veteran presence, you know, a guy that still walked out there in the second half every play, like this was a winnable game, and he stuck to it. That last big throw to Njoku, it's third and long, he stays in the pocket, he takes a hit, and he completes a pass that eventually wins the game. Like, that was the biggest pass, I think, of the entire game. Maybe the Cooper touchdown was bigger, but, I mean, at that moment, that was huge. And so you can't say enough about the defense. You can't say enough about JOK. You can't say enough about Myles Garrett and the job that they did. But my gosh, that they keep winning when the injuries keep stacking up is so impressive. We're going to get to it. Who's your MVP, your most valuable Brown?
I put the entire defense, and some of those reasons were listed in my 60, but big stops, turnovers, stepping up, even if you don't play all that often, and a shoestring tackle like that basically lets them compete for a win. It didn't matter who was on the field. They all played really great. They all played so great at times that I didn't realize Denzel Ward was playing until like the third quarter. I had no idea he was on the field. And I guess that's a nice problem to have. So I'm not going to single out one person because I thought they were all really good, but the defense as a unit is the reason they continue to win football games.
My list consisted of a bunch of defensive players, and Chuck's right on all accounts, and one offensive player. So I'm going to give mine for the second week in a row to David Njoku. This game, 10 receptions, 104 yards and a touchdown. And that touchdown catch was ridiculous.
Yeah.
He caught the back half of that ball falling out of bounds. I mean, that was absurd. And I know this because maybe we'll get to it. I had some money riding on this. I know this for a fact. He was having a good game, but not a great game until the last offensive possession where he amassed 65 yards of receiving in one offensive possession. So just getting him the ball in crunch time. And it seems like, and I alluded to this last week, it seems like Flacco and Njoku, they're on the same page. And that's a huge mismatch. That's what we wanted to see out of this guy forever. And finally, we have a quarterback. It took us four this year, but finally we have a quarterback that's getting that guy the ball in the right time and in the right place.
Njoku was mine too. I mean, just too impactful, too many big plays. You know, for all of my complaints heading into this season that guy's not the real deal, he is showing it. And it's not always as consistent with his hands as you want him to be, but damn, he's had a really good year and had a really great, really important big game yesterday. And Phil, we're not going to get to it. Sorry. Nobody gets to hear about another gigantic bet that you won, but bear with me. This one's going to take a minute. Let's do Brown's good news, Brown's bad news. Brown's all alone in the 5 seed right now, a game ahead of the Bengals, Colts, Texans, and Bills. AFC South makes this a little interesting because the Texans, Colts, and Jags are all tied at 8-6, and Trevor Lawrence is in the concussion protocol. So any of those three might actually become the 4 seed. Good news for the Browns. Browns own tiebreakers over all of them. The first tiebreaker for the playoffs is head-to-head matchups. Browns have that on the Colts and the Jags right now. The second tiebreak is a team's record against the AFC. Browns are 6-3. Texans are 5-4. Bengals are 3-6. Bills are 4-5. So they have the tiebreak on all three of those teams right now. We're going to get to the Texans game next week in a minute. The bad news. You guys already know what this is. The Browns are probably starting 4 second string or worse offensive linemen, a backup running back, their fourth quarterback, second string or worse safeties, and the D-line is missing the guy who rubbed his belly after sex. Also, two of the next three teams the Browns have to play are fighting for playoff spots. Right now, the Browns have a legitimate stranglehold on a playoff spot, but we can see the impact of the injuries, especially to the offensive line, already showing up. Are the Browns a playoff team, or are the injuries just too much?
Man, they're a playoff team. They've beat quality opponents with these injuries, with the injuries to the key positions, quarterback, running back, all those things. Can they overcome 4 backups or some third stringers playing on that line? You saw they could not run the ball. And I think that was more of a function that the Bears had the best defense in the NFL since week 6.
That's true. That's probably the best defense they'll face for the rest of the year, right? I mean,
So do I have enough faith in Kevin Stefanski's play calling to overcome some of that stuff? Maybe it's easier to hide injured linemen than it is injured skill position players. And you saw some of that, some of the misdirection stuff. That one play was gorgeous, and they called a penalty on it, where it was a fake pitch, and Flacco turned the other way and then threw it back for a screen. That way, I was like, man, if they can kind of take advantage of some of that stuff, I'm not saying please no more trick play, that kind of stuff, but like misdirection where, and even there was even a play later in the game where I don't know if it was a guard who rolled out of the pocket to protect Flacco like 15 yards to
the
right.
That was
the
Cooper play. Yeah.
Right. So is, can that stuff kind of happen? I think he's intelligent enough to design that kind of thing. You see them they're more than prepared against every opponent they're playing. They're laying a blueprint here for me to believe they can beat basically anybody with anybody on the field. So to me, they're a playoff team. One, because they have a lot of tiebreakers and they control their own destiny and they keep winning and the schedule looks okay for me. So I have no doubt that they're a playoff team.
I'm going to start with a negative comment to add to your list of negativity. And the Browns also are faced with playing 3 games within 12 days in this part of the season. And
that's right. They got the Thursday game in
there. Good with the injuries mounting up. But I'm going to turn this positive real quick and say, yes, this is a playoff team. They need one more win to make sure they're a playoff team. They might make it with 0 more wins given the tiebreakers, but one more win and they're in. And I think what's lost in all this, and it's ridiculous to watch this happen as our offensive line continues to fall to injury, but Bill Callahan is one of the preeminent offensive line
absolutely
in the NFL. And as much praise as we've been given Schwartz all year, like maybe this guy is the Jim Schwartz on the other side of the ball. We had our emergency center run in on a 3rd down and long play yesterday and snap it. Shotgun right to Flacco's chest. I don't know that we converted, but it was like, all right, he blocked his guy. He did his job. So I feel like this is a playoff team. I feel as long as Flacco's back there, and that's weird to say, if the offensive line knows they're starting during the practice week, we'll be just fine. Somehow we're winning games without even running the ball. And I think against these next 3 opponents, we can find one win in there.
I agree the schedule works out. I mean, I think even if you're worried about how they can perform with a banged up offensive line, that Jets game is a win. You know, the Jets are a disaster right now. So, I mean,
is Aaron Rodgers coming back for that?
Probably not.
No. Aaron Rodgers never coming back. My gosh.
Would that promote him to like the biggest asshole of all assholes if he came
oh, boy.
The rest of the season?
He's up there. I don't know.
Sorry to interrupt.
I think that's the win. I think my heart says, yeah, and that's it. We've been saying for weeks, 10 gets you in, and there's no reason not to think that now. My heart says they're absolutely a playoff team. They keep finding ways to solve this. My head says, eventually in the NFL, that's going to catch up to you. Guys are going to get tape on these guys. They're going to say, okay, this is how we beat up this third string guard. Here's how it's going to happen. Here's how we pick on these safeties. You know, one of them's a rookie. That stuff just catches up to you in the NFL, and it worries me. But they keep doing it, and the schedule does line up nice. And I think you're right. If you're struggling on the offensive line, you know, Callahan Auto Parts is the guy you want there to put the fix on. You know, and so that guy is awesome. And so maybe he can, with a full week of hopefully having, it sounds like Petonio is going to play. So it's, you know, you get him back in there, you get some other guy. Maybe it'll be. Yes, they're definitely making the playoffs. Go Browns. All right. Next week, Browns head to Houston for a matchup against the Texans. Preseason, everybody picked a win except for Miller. Is Miller on something or onto something?
Miller got lucky. He's probably onto something given what's happening right now. But yeah, I think he got lucky. This is a Browns team that's heading in. If Stroud is cleared of concussion protocol, heading into a game against the Texans, where the game is way more important for Houston than it is for the Cleveland Browns, even after everything we just said, because the Browns need to find one win in three. The Texans have to win like three wins in three to make sure they make the playoffs. Yeah. So a little bit more important for that team.
So you're picking the Browns to lose next week?
No, I'm sticking with my pick. I'm just saying Miller may have backed himself into a really good prediction.
I assume what Miller was doing, what we all kind of did when we were looking at that, and you're going, they're going to lose a game or two that they shouldn't. And that was probably that he circled that game is my guess. Again, I thought they would be improved. They're much improved. It depends if CJ Stroud is going to play. I know they'll still be down. Tank Dell was not playing, right? But I think Nico Collins is back. He came back. I don't know if Dalton Schultz will be back. They have a good young defense too. They kind of remind me of a Browns, not as dominant of a defense. You just hope the Browns defense is a little more dominant. I wouldn't change my pick because it feels like I should, but they just keep proving me wrong. So I'm going to say they continue to roll.
I guess the Browns are just winning the rest of their games. We might as well just accept it.
Right.
And yeah, Miller's wrong. All right, moving on. Sip of Wine and Gold, our weekly Cavs recap. Disappointing, demoralizing, depressing. And that was just what happened on the court. Shorthanded to start last week, the Cavs lost in unimpressive fashion to the Magic and twice to the Celtics. Before there was time to cry over the losses, the Garland and Mobley injury news was announced. The Cavs, now missing two starters for at least the next 2 months, wagged the Mutombo finger at the doubters and beat the Hawks on Saturday and the Rockets tonight. Cavs are now 15-12 and in the 8th seed in the East. This is an all hands on deck. Everybody needs to step up stretch. Give me a big name guy on the Cavs and a lesser known or lesser appreciated guy who you think need to step up over the next couple of months.
Well, shit. It's got to be Donovan Mitchell. But at times that worries me because you saw this week how disjointed sometimes that offense looked where he's playing hero ball. And I assume that's going to rear its head a little more often where he doesn't think he has options to pass to. But ultimately the guy's a gamer and he's a scorer. Can he elevate for the next 2 months and score more? Probably. Not so well-known name, which scares me, is I'm going to say Tristan Thompson because
I don't think that's a bad choice.
Yeah, I mean, he just sucks
to say, right?
It does suck to say.
That's what Chloe says. Oh, jeez.
It does suck to say because he's at an advanced age, and you saw him get some meaningful minutes where I think he was guarding Tatum in that Celtic game.
Yeah.
And I was just that doesn't look right. I don't want to have to say that for the next 2 months, but that's kind of what we're looking, you know, like they're not going to change to a small ball kind of team here. He's going to get more meaningful minutes. I thought that like 8 to 10 to 12 minute thing might be the precipice for him and he would maximize those minutes. But if you're talking about how you're looking at 16 to 20, maybe more, that concerns me. One, because his body might break down, and two, because I just don't know if he can hang with some of those defensive assignments that he's pulling, especially when you're guarding Tatum. That's the guy that you're putting on him. So those would be my two. One's low hanging fruit. The other one, God bless.
Mitchell's got to step up and will. So I'm going to pick another big name, and I'm going to include this in. He's definitely a big name on the starting five. Jared Allen needs to step up with Mobley gone. And he did the other night, right? Against the Hawks. He really did. And tonight he kind of disappeared again. I'm going to put a lot on Jared Allen, and I don't need a ton of offense out of you, but I need 10 to 15 points every night just because you're around the rim. And because I'm going to give you kind of the, okay, you don't have to score 25 to make up for Mobley and Garland. You better get 10 to 15 rebounds a night too. And that's what he did against the Hawks the other night. He went for like 26 and 12 or something like that. It was pretty good. 25 and 14. I just looked at my notes. Close enough.
Yeah, that was really close, actually.
I just guessed. But anyway, so that's the Allen we need going forward. He's got to be that center. He's got to score and rebound. And tonight he disappeared and we needed other guys. And that's why we're playing an overtime game against the Rockets. But so he's my big name. My lesser known name, I don't want to put Okoro in that group because he's a guy that was a starter and now is a starter. But I'm going to say Isaac Okoro's got to play like a starter now. This is it, man. Like you were part of that bench crew and you were doing a good job coming back, getting healthy and giving us energy. But now if you're starting in that small forward position, again, I need double digit points out of you and I need 5 to 7 rebounds every night out of that kind of guy. So that's a lot to ask. That's what we hoped Isaac Okoro would round into on this team, even coming off the bench. But now you need it in the starting five.
Well, my two big name guys that I had lined up for this were Jared Allen and Isaac Okoro. And so Denko somehow took both of them in his answers. I think the big name guy for me still at the top of the list is J.A. And I think you saw it. You're exactly right, Phil. You saw it in the Hawks game. That guy has so much more offensive ability than we normally see. And we've got to see it. And it's got to be something where they're giving him the opportunities to create his own shot. They're giving him the space to do it. But he's got to carry a heavier load offensively, rebounding, and defensively. And that's a ton to ask. But that guy's been my favorite guy on this team for years. And I think he can do it. And I think you saw that, like, that offensive game is a little bit more developed, I think, than we thought it was. You saw it against the Hawks. Didn't see it tonight, man. Tonight was a tough game. The Houston plays good defense. My lesser-known guy, it's Sam Merrill. Here's a guy who should be able to give you instant offense, which is what they're going to need. They're going to need points. They've moved some points to the starting rotation because of these guys being out. They're going to need points in that second and third rotation. And Merrill's a guy who showed tonight. He had 19 tonight. That guy can fill it up if he stays consistent. And I just think they're going to need the scoring there. So I think I'm going to go with J.A. and Sam Merrill. Next week, Cavs stay home for the holidays. Wednesday against the Jazz. Thursday against the Pelicans. And the day before the night before Christmas, Saturday night against the Bulls. One winner, the Pelicans. Two losers, Jazz and Bulls. How many wins is Santa bringing to the Cavs this week?
Let's get two. Let's get two out of those three. Let's keep our head above water and figure out how we play with the new roster, so to speak.
The same. I think they can get two. I think they have to get two. In weeks like this, they can't have losing records or even Steven stuff. You're going to have to steal a few games with the injuries you're facing. What worries me is that the rotations were changed night to night when guys were somewhat healthy. And I'm interested to see what's going to happen this week. Maybe you get a blueprint moving forward, but you have to get two this week.
Bunch of Scrooges. I'm going 3-0. Oh, the Cavs are going to get head into if Christmas
there was ever
on a
week,
five-game winning streak. Go Cavs. The teams are playing aren't very good. Like the Pelicans aren't. I don't know. Anyway, go Cavs. Let's take our first break. Come back. Head out on the road. Talk some football. Welcome back, fellas, to our second segment. We'll head out on the road, and we'll start with our Week 15 NFL storylines. Welcome back to Loserville. The NFC South continues to thrill. Baker took the Bucs on the road for a big win over the Packers. The Saints dominated the Giants, and the Panthers, with nothing to lose or win since the Bears own their first-round pick next season, beat the Falcons. Don't look now. Both the Bucks and the Saints are 7-7, and both are tied with the Vikings and Rams for the last two playoff spots. Is Loserville getting two teams into the NFL playoffs?
Oh, God, I hope not. I hope not, but maybe, right? Like, after what you just said, like, there are a lot of NFC teams that could end up one game below 500 and make the playoffs this year. Ugh. If it's a layer of a parlay, I'm saying yes. I'm doing it. Let's do it. Plus 700.
I don't know. Like, you kind of talked about it last week, and I don't remember what team you're talking about. You weren't nervous, but you're saying they're playing their best football when it matters.
That was the Packers, I think. Lost.
Yeah, right. But are the Buccaneers playing their best football right now? Well, at least Baker Mayfield did last week. Are the Saints playing their best football? I assume they probably still play each other in the next 3 weeks. I assume there's a Bucs-Saints game there that might shake out that division a little better. I hope the Falcons, if you lose to a Panther team, you have no business competing for anything. But I don't think this can't be the AFC North of the NFC, right? Where multiple teams are going to get in.
With losing, right?
Yeah, just one of them. Even though I'm picking the Saints, my heart, and I'm wearing it underneath, my heart is with the Bucks. I'm wearing a Buccaneers old school shirt underneath there. So, and you know, I'm a Baker Mark, so go Bucks.
Well, we're about to get to it, but the NFC South is basically the AFC South, and that it might have somehow multiple teams in the playoffs. I think they have a chance of getting two, and I will constantly lean on the fact that all of those teams that are right on that 7-7 area are so flawed, because one of them is the Vikings. You know, like, come on, how are the Vikings doing it? And they almost beat the Bengals this past week. Bucks and Saints play not this coming Sunday, so not Christmas Eve, but I guess New Year's Eve is when they would be playing. I think two teams are making it from Loserville, and that's fantastic. I hope that somehow there's a losing record tie to win the division, and the tiebreaker sends one of them into the playoffs with a losing record. That would be the definition of Loserville. All right, let's move over to the AFC. As I said, AFC South, like we talked about before. Jags, Colts, and Texans all tied at 8-6. Jags remaining schedule, Tampa, Carolina, and Tennessee. Colts remaining schedule, Falcons, Raiders, Texans. Houston's remaining schedule, Browns, go Browns, Titans, and Colts. Who is winning the AFC South?
As you said,
maybe run through them again.
No. I was paying attention as you went through it. As you said those things, I had Jacksonville winning two, I had the Colts winning two, and Houston losing two. That would leave the Jags and the Colts tied at 10-7. And the tiebreaker, I'm going to say, goes to Jacksonville. So they win the division. I made that up.
Yeah, I have no idea. I already did my tiebreaker research for the night.
Right.
I'm kind of with Philly, where I think Jacksonville wins the division, but this is a team that's lost three games in a row, I believe, right? They lost to the Browns, they lost to the Ravens, and they lost to the Bengals. So the AFC North has just dismantled it.
Just ruined Jacksonville.
And the Browns have a reputation for breaking teams. I don't know
if they break
Jacksonville. I still think the cream rises to the top in that division, and I think they're the most talented, even with some injuries. So I think it's the Jags.
I think I'm going Colts. I just think they have the easiest run. The Falcons are rotten. The Raiders, I don't know. I'm not ready to buy it. And by the time you get to the last game of the year, where's that Texans team, which maybe was punching above its weight for a few weeks there and maybe is ripe to lose. Now, that would be the Colts winning three games in a row, which with Gardner Minshew at quarterback. I don't know if that's going to happen.
That's right.
But maybe the garden is growing, and I don't know. I'm going to go with the Colts, I think, largely based on the schedule. Why don't we talk a little NFC? Are the Dallas Cowboys serious Super Bowl contenders? Destroyed earlier in the year by the 49ers, but then they dominated Philly a couple weeks ago, but then they're blown out yesterday in Buffalo. Cowboys are 10-4 this season, but seven of those wins are against the Giants, the Jets, the Cardinals, the Patriots, and the Commanders. What do you think? Real Super Bowl contender?
They put up a lot of points. They put up the most points in the NFC, but a lot of those are against the shit teams you just listed. I think they're a really dangerous team no matter who they're playing. Their defense is really good. Their offense is really good. So why not? it's not like the Eagles have been playing great football over the last month. They have not. The Niners have gotten better. Is it safe to say they might be the second best team in the NFL? Well, third best, because our Detroit Lions are up there as well. I can see them beating an Eagle team, even if they got blown out before. I think they are. The NFC is so weird. I think they are. I think anybody in the NFC is a Super Bowl contender that has 9 or 10 wins already. I think so. You're looking at the Niners, the Cowboys, the Eagles, and the Lions. I can see any of them beating any of the other teams, with the Niners rising to the top. But yeah, they're America's team, right?
Well, f- that stupid. Back when one game a week was on TV for everybody to watch. So dumb. Shut your mouth.
Yeah, that for sure. I hate the Dallas Cowboys. Like I grew up in inner city Cleveland with a friend who was a Dallas Cowboys fan for no reason. Hated it. But anyway, to answer your question, I don't think they're a serious Super Bowl contender, and here's why. 7 of their 10 wins are at home. They're 7-0 at home. They're in a position where they may not see a home game in the postseason, right? I mean, potentially. If they end up in a wild card.
If they don't win the division. Leader, yeah,
right. Yeah. Potentially. They're the only 10-plus win team in the NFC with a losing record on the road. I don't think the Super Bowl's in Dallas this year. I'm pretty sure it's not.
It's in Vegas, baby.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they're going to have to go through and play a game in San Fran, potentially. Yeah. I mean, of course, they're part of the top tier, but are they a serious Super Bowl contender this year? I don't think so. As soon as they leave Dallas, they look like shit.
Sounds an awful lot like the Browns. Only win at home.
Yeah, well, are the Browns,
right, and the Browns aren't a serious contender. Super Bowl contender, right?
Yeah, why not? Maybe.
No. Only if it's against the Buccaneers.
You know, the Cowboys are hard to figure out because there's so much talent all over that field. And, man, when they look good, they look good. But they look terrible against Buffalo. They got run all over. Like Buffalo just beat them up. And so many of their wins are against shitty teams. So I'm going to go the same way and say they're not serious contenders. Although I might go so far as to say I don't think anybody in the NFC is a serious contender except for the 49ers.
Yeah,
like, I don't – you know, everybody seems a little bit flawed at the top in the NFC except for the Niners. So I'm going to say Dallas, not a serious contender. All right, week 16, looking ahead to next week. What's your week 16 non-Browns game that you're most excited to see?
I like the Ravens and 49ers game to end the week. That is Christmas night at 8:15. I will be on at very least number 2 of my bourbon milk punches by that point. And watching what potentially...
Got news for you. We might be recording that night. Go ahead.
Do you think us recording would keep me from drinking my second bourbon milk punch? I mean, come on.
No, I'm just letting you know.
Yeah. That's fine. So Christmas night at 8:15, Ravens 49ers, which might be a preview, even though I predicted other teams, of this year's Super Bowl. So I'm looking forward to that game in week 16.
It's the sexiest game. It's...
Oh, yeah.
I assume that would have a huge rating on Christmas night. And that was at the top of my list. But... I like two other games as well. Cowboys, Dolphins. You're talking about two teams that don't beat winning teams. So somebody's got to win that game or it could tie.
Right. 2-10-4 teams, right? Yeah.
But I'm going to actually sit on the Bucks and the Jags because you have two divisions that are up for grabs and both of them kind of need this win to get in the driver's seat. Two young upstart quarterbacks, Baker Mayfield is one of them. But I mean, it's like they're both pretty good teams this late in the season. They're playing for something. That's the game I'm going to seek out every football game, but that's the one I'm probably going to put up in the top left corner of a multi-channel and watch.
So Chuck is on the battle for Middle Florida. I like it. I had Dallas and Miami too, and it, almost exactly the same thing as Chuck said, the battle of two teams that can't beat good teams. Like who's the best team that can't beat good teams? I'm going with Cincinnati and Pittsburgh because I think it's an opportunity for the Bengals to put a nail in the coffin of Pittsburgh's season once and for all if they win. But a Steelers win at this point probably helps the Browns a lot. And I'd like to see that happen. So I think that Cincinnati-Pittsburgh game is going to be a really good one to watch next weekend. So what I take from this question and this portion of the segment is there is a ton of good football to watch on Christmas weekend, and this is going to be a lot of fun. But it's not all pro football, gentlemen. We're going to have college football next weekend too. How about our From the Land annual College Bowl Pick'em Challenge? Our standings after week one, two men and a little lady. Burke and I are tied with Tammy at 3 points apiece. Denko and Whitney are both beating Chuck. They have two. Okay. Miller and Chuck tied in Steeler Land. That's what we call the basement at 1 point. So let's look ahead to the games that we're going to count for next week. First one, the Work From Home Famous Toastery Bowl. That one was played at 2:30 this afternoon. All of the picks from everybody were in before kickoff. Western Kentucky +4 versus Old Dominion. Romeo Crennel, former Browns coach, graduated from Western Kentucky. Jonathan DeCoster, current Browns offensive assistant, graduated from Old Dominion. So, old Browns or new Browns, who did you take and how did it go?
I'm pretty sure I took Old Dominion. I think it's such a cool name for a college. And I think it didn't go well following your text later in the afternoon.
Yeah, if you're following at home, Old Dominion blew, I think, a 28-point lead and lost in overtime to Western Kentucky today. So
I took Old Browns, but not for that reason. I took it because their mascot's a red blob, and I think that's hilarious for the Hilltoppers. And it did not look good early on, down 28-0. So I stopped paying attention at work and found out they won in overtime. So lucky guess.
So I went new Browns and Old Dominion, and then watched Old Dominion play like the old Browns and blow a big lead and blow a game they easily should have won. So moving on. The Tuesday Night Football Classic Scooters Coffee Frisco Bowl tomorrow at 9 p.m. University of Texas San Antonio -13 versus Marshall. UTSA's starting quarterback is a seventh-year senior. Marshall's starting quarterback is freshman Cole Pennington, son of former Marshall and NFL quarterback Chad Pennington.
Wow. Look at that. Wow.
Tommy Boy or Doogie Howser Jr.? Who you got?
Man, it's hard. It is hard to lay. How many points? 13
13. Oh, my gosh.
I feel like Marshall probably has the better quarterback ceiling here, but he's a freshman. And the other guy's like our age. So I'm going with the Joe Flacco grizzly veteran +13. I'll take UTSA.
So they're getting UTSA's getting the points, not the Herd. Herd's laying them. Mm-hmm. I gotta make a move here. I'm in the Steeler basement. We are Marshall. That's who I'll
yeah.
take.
A lot of people go to college for 7 years. They're called doctors, Tommy Boy. I'm going with UTSA. Give me those 13 points. I want to turn things around. All right, next game. The so braggy, famous Idaho Potato Bowl. That's Saturday afternoon at 3:30. Georgia State +1 versus Utah State. Georgia, famously the birthplace of Hulk Hogan. Utah, not so famously the birthplace of Dr. Jerry Buss. So, who you got, brother? Hulkamania or Showtime? I practiced that. It was way better when I was practicing.
You sounded great. Well, I've been a Hulkamaniac for 30-plus years. So, I don't remember where you said he's from where. Which team am I taking?
Georgia. You're taking Georgia if you're on the Hulkster.
Taking Georgia.
Yeah, man. Hulk Hogan, I had Hulk Hogan posable figurines as a kid, and I watched the Saturday morning cartoon with him and Captain Lou Albano. And
hell yeah.
So Georgia State all the way. Am I getting a point there? Am I getting a point or giving a point? It doesn't matter. I'll give that point. It doesn't matter.
Parlay Phil. Doesn't matter.
That's right. I can't imagine Dr. Jerry Buss felt much at place in his hometown in Utah. But I love Showtime more than Hulkamania. So I'm taking Utah State in this one. All right, last one. The Who Are You Now? 68 Ventures Bowl. Also Saturday night, this one at 6:00. Southern Alabama -16.5 versus Eastern Michigan. Southern Alabama famous alum, Michael Kearney, the world's youngest college graduate. He was 8 years old when he graduated.
What a dick.
Eastern Michigan famous alum, Cleveland's own Earl Boykins. Earl. smarter than Tursic or better than him at sports? Who you got?
Better than him at sports every day. And I get how many points? 16, something like that. 14. 15?
No, you're given 16 and a half. If you take Eastern Michigan.
Yeah. They're not going to cover that. Let's go with.
Oh man. No, you're right.
No, yeah. I'm looking at it right now. Eastern Michigan's getting the points.
Yeah.
I'm taking better than Tursic at sports plus two touchdowns. I feel pretty solid with that call. Go Eastern Michigan.
Same. Earl Boykins is one of the best basketball players I ever saw live in person, at least at the high school level. It's cool he made it to NBA level. And I'm pretty sure a young upstart, Nick Caserio, went to Eastern Michigan as a GA to improve his NFL career. So I'm gonna gobble up all those. 16 and a half. Sounds like a Wednesday night game in the middle of the season, but I'll still take those points.
Well, I know who everybody picked. So I'm going with South Alabama just to see if I can be the only one who scores any points on this one in the 68 Ventures Bowl. Anyway, fellas, that's it for next week's College Bowl Pick'em Challenge. And that's it for this segment. Why don't we take our final break? We're going to come back, head off the field for the final week of our holiday extravaganza. Welcome back, fellas, to our final segment. We'll head off the field, and Christmas is coming, and it's time to continue our holiday extravaganza with our holiday movie spectacular. Last week, we each picked a holiday movie that we had never seen, and we all watched all three movies during the week. So let the spectacular begin with Noel. On Disney Plus, this was Chuck's selection. This movie was Succession in reverse. As Santa's kids tried to punt on taking over the family business as long as they could after Santa died, until the daughter instantly learned sign language, grew a pair, and became the first woman Santa. Chuck, take us away.
Oh, it's a better recap than I wrote, so thanks for handling it. This movie was actually supposed to be released in theaters and then ended up as a Disney Plus exclusive. Why?
COVID.
I'm going to say because no one would have gone, but okay.
I think you're probably right on both, because it was around COVID time. And I think Disney Plus was kind of launching and needed some exclusivity stuff. And this is what it was. Phil, you're a learned doctor, the only doctor on this show. Watching this movie, I wrote a note like, I need to ask Phil this question. Should the reindeer be concerned about lingering concussion symptoms after knocking their heads together before they take off?
Yeah, there's a lot of brain injury going on there. And those are the guys that you're relying on your navigation and steering in basically subspace, right? Like, not good at all.
No, they're not banging heads, they're banging antlers. You can't compare it to human beings hitting their heads together because we don't have antlers. If you had antlers, you'd like, they're just tapping their antlers together.
If we did have antlers, Gerber, would you bang your heads together?
I wouldn't bang my head with somebody, but I'd bang antlers for sure. It's like a high five. It's like a high five.
It's a high five in reindeer land.
If your hand was connected to your brain.
Gerb, favorite character in Noel and why?
I would go with the guy who owned the Petco because he was really happy all the time. And I think he was really going to get somewhere with the lady who ran the mall. And I think they were going to be a happy couple. I think that was going to work out all right. And I'm a guy who loves love. So I'm going with Petco guy. I don't know if he had an actual name.
I don't know either. Phil, favorite character?
I'm going to say Mrs. Claus, because the last time I saw her in a movie, it was Airplane. And I thought that was awesome. That was fantastic.
I thought the last time I saw her in a movie, was she the mom in Coneheads as Maybe. Well? And I only remember it because I had to sit through it a bunch of times working at Chagrin Cinema. Well, no one else was sitting through it. I still didn't clean the theater. Quick word association as it pertains to the movie. I need a response. Three words or less. Gerbs, Noel.
Three words or less?
Three words or less.
Not so easy from this direction, is it?
It isn't. No. No, it isn't. Not at all. Not the worst.
Okay. Not the worst. Okay. Nice.
Sorry, I was actually looking for equal rights. Phil, word association. Noel.
Equal rights.
No, I was
saying, that's not fair, Chuck.
No, I was actually looking for challenging gender roles. So
okay. Damn it. Both that was my second wrong. Choice.
This movie is a pretty shameless retread of Elf in a lot of ways. And you would think from a female perspective, it could work. But what went wrong? Phil. I'm assuming it went wrong because I don't think any of us really enjoyed it.
No, it did go wrong. What went wrong is Anna Kendrick's character. The movie wanted you to take her side in most of it. And because of her, she had good moments, but most of her upbringing and her entitlement or whatever and her or ignorance, I don't know what it was hard to line up with Anna Kendrick, even though you were supposed to the whole movie. You knew the movie was going that way. You're going to take this girl's side and the next Santa is going to be a female, which is fine by me. It's fine by me. But I don't know, Anna, there is something there. She didn't hit that tone that we needed for us to say, oh my God, this is the person we're rooting for. Because there were times where I was kind of rooting for her brother. I'm like, yeah, just stay in Phoenix, man. Stay in Phoenix. What are you doing? What are you doing?
Live your dream, dude. Yeah.
Yoga is where it's at.
She's a character in every movie that I've seen her in that is likable. And she's supposed to be likable in here. And I really like her all that much. So Gerb, what do you think went wrong with the movie? It doesn't have to just be a character. It could be, obviously, there's larger issues than just characters in this film.
I think what went wrong was just it was terribly written. I appreciate maybe the goal or the theme, the fact that like she was never considered, but she was always kind of the right one. I think that's great. I just don't think it was well written. There wasn't like other than yogurt pants and when she ate the sunscreen. Yep. I don't know if there was much that was real funny in this. No. You know, and Anna Kendrick is funny. It was, in my opinion, probably a rush to get it out, to get it for the holidays and just throw out a holiday movie starring Anna Kendrick. And like you said last week when she was at her peak, but just poorly written. It's just one of those things like, oh, we'll just throw all these people together and it'll make a great Christmas movie. But I blame nobody who is involved except for maybe like the writers or producers because they're the ones who sucked.
Yeah. I think that this, the same person who wrote it, directed it. And sometimes that's a recipe for disaster. Finally, Anna Kendrick said she was so excited to do this movie because she always wanted to be a part of something that families would watch every holiday season. So, will you be making this part of your holiday Christmas movie rotation, or is it one and done?
Not as long as Violent Night exists. It is one and done. And Anna Kendrick, as far as the family goes, she's in all the Trolls movies, man. I watched those with my kid. She's great. She's great.
Gerb, will you be, well, you have Disney Plus. You could buy it on DVD if you want to watch it some other time, I guess, as a standalone. But is this something you will ever queue up again or stop if it somehow makes it to Freeform or TBS in the holiday season?
The list of movies that are on regular rotation at Christmas in this house are only two. And this one is never coming close to touching either Christmas Vacation or The Family Stone. So no, never excellent. Watching this movie again.
Okay. That's Noel.
All right, Chucky. Nice work. Thanks, buddy. Our next movie was our Denko selection, Violent Night on Amazon Prime. Apathetic and over at Santa gets his groove back with the help of the only nice person in the movie and by killing people who hate Christmas. Denko, take it away.
First of all, are you sure you want to end this segment with Mistletoe Promise? Because that's the order. All right.
Hell yeah.
Don't you worry.
All right. Just giving you an out. But here we go. Violent Night. My questions are not going to be as open-ended as Chuck's because this movie, it has absolutely escalated my rankings of Christmas movies after watching it a few times over the last week. And here we go. So this, in my opinion, this is clearly the Christmas movie we needed. It's full of depth, of symbolism and theme. The main theme being belief. It explores the idea that adults become jaded, cynical, lose hope, which is a common theme in pretty much every Christmas movie we've ever seen, right? But this time, one of the characters that's involved in that is Santa Claus. He suffers these challenges. That's something a little different. Santa becomes cynical about his job, burned out and frustrated about today's children and their greed and entitlement, right? Santa and Mrs. Claus, they're going through some shit, man. 1,100 years of marriage, and they're in a bit of a rough
Holy shit. Yeah. Underrated part of the movie for sure. Exactly. Can you imagine?
No. I think I made it 7. So 1,100 years of marriage, and they're in a bit of a rough patch. Understandable, right? So Santa's kind of losing faith in himself and in humanity until he meets Trudy Lightstone, whose nickname is True. I don't know if you guys caught that, but that's fantastic.
Yeah, Denko, we caught it.
I know. Well, I watched it.
Beat us over the head with it.
I can't assume you caught it and watching it once while falling asleep with your Grinch mimosas. So True helps him find his Christmas magic and rekindle his Viking warrior heart. I mean, that's fantastic.
Is there a question coming somewhere?
There is. There's like four of them. There's four of them. I'm wasting all of my 5 minutes.
Denko talk.
This gem of a Christmas flick combines equal parts Home Alone, Succession, Die Hard, and John Wick in perfect harmony. But my questions for you guys have nothing to do with any of that. So I'm going to start with some easy warm-ups. Gerbs, Alva Lightstone is Judy Gemstone, right? I mean, same actress,
same character.
Same character. So speaking of Alva Lightstone, she named her son Bertrude after her mother Gertrude. In hopes of getting a larger slice of the family fortune. If you could inherit $300 million from your mom, would you have named one of your sons Blaine?
I'd have named one of my kids Turd Sandwich if I would have gotten $300 million from my mom.
Again, I didn't want to answer for you, but I thought Blaine was a good option.
My kids came pre-named, so it didn't matter. I didn't have a choice in it anyway.
Hypothetical. I get it. Chuck. So you've made it well known that Christmas pageantry decorations and symbolism is a big part of your family celebration of the holidays. So in this particular film, a prominent symbol for Papa Noel or Boba Natale or Saint Nick was Skullcrusher, a flippin' Warhammer. Should we entertain the possibility of hanging mini Warhammers on our Christmas trees?
It wouldn't stop me from the stuff we got up there. But to be honest, even though he hasn't and will not see the movie for quite some time, my son thinks everything is a Warhammer. He thought candy canes were Warhammers.
What a great age.
Perfect.
Yeah. So I would have, I mean, if there were mini, it's got to be a big, strong trunk tree to hold even
mini Warhammers.
Sure. Yeah. Right. I'd be all for that because looking at my tree now, there's some weird stuff on there, including some Steelers bullshit. So I would be more than happy to use a mini Warhammer to destroy those ornaments.
I appreciate that answer, and I'm glad because I also feel like I'm going to order a mini Warhammer ornament for next year. But regardless of your feeling towards the Warhammer thing, Chuck, in the Rambaldo Christmas Wonderland, what is the most prominent Christmas symbol on display?
Red pickup trucks.
All right.
With trees in the back.
Yeah, it's a good one. That's a good one, right? That is America all the way.
Yeah.
I got several of those myself. Yeah. I know I'm running long with my time, but this is the question I needed to ask you guys tonight. The thought-provoking question. I'm going to call this segment Santa's Sleigh of the Day because there was a lot of murder in this movie. Santa's Sleigh of the Day. So which of the following kills perpetrated by jolly old Saint Nick was the best? And how did this merry murder exemplify Christmas spirit? I'm going to run you through four kills. Kill number one, Frosty Lookout Below Man. Santa jabs an ice pick into the mercenary Tinsel's femoral artery and pushes him out of the second story window, skewering him on an icicle decoration below. Kill number two, Melly Kaliki making your face burst into flames. Santa bludgeons mercenary Frosty with pool balls in his stocking before shoving a Christmas star into his eyeball, into his brain, and then plugging the Christmas star in, producing the facial fire. Kill number three, now Dancer. Now Prancer, now grenade down your pantser. After laying waste to a dozen of the kill squad members with a sledgehammer, a candy cane, an ice skate, and a snowblower, Santa shoves a grenade down the pants of the last kill squad member while Brian Adams' Christmas Time plays over the epic fight scene. And finally, kill number four, chimneys sweep the arms and the legs. Santa's Mortal Kombat-style fatality of Mr. Scrooge, John Leguizamo's character, as he pulls him up, conveniently placed in an outdoor chimney, turning him into a Yule log stump of a man. So there's four options. Frosty Lookout Below Man, Mele Kaleki making your face burst into flames, now Dancer, now Prancer, now Grenade Down Your Pantser, and Chimney Sweep the Arms and Legs. Which is your favorite kill? And how does that kill exemplify Christmas spirit?
So I'm going to go with the second one. I'm going to go with the stab him in the eye with a Christmas star and then plug it in to light him on fire.
Yeah.
In part because I saw the kind of theme of the other movies that kind of are represented or alluded to throughout the movie. and the drop all the pool balls in the sock and beat somebody is another Christmas classic. I think that was like License to Kill, the Steven Seagal movie that he uses that move. I don't know if that was a Christmas movie actually. But, I appreciated that part of that kill. And how it relates to Christmas is just like the beauty of Christmas decorations and their multifunctional uses.
I love it. I love it. I like Santa's response in that moment. He kind of laughs and says, ho, 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 as he's blowing away the smoke. Yeah, yeah. All right, Chuck, what do you think? Best kill?
For me, it's kill four, chimney sweep the arms and legs. In a movie that was extremely violent. This was the one
in a good way.
Yeah, in a great way. This was the one that made me throw up a little in my mouth as I was watching it.
Yeah.
But as it relates, Chip has been asking an awful lot because we don't have a chimney in our house. How is Santa supposed to get in the house? I'm like, he'll find a way, buddy.
He's a murdering bastard.
I'm wondering like if I should show him that scene and say, thank God we don't have a chimney.
The answer is no. No. If you're wondering, the answer is no.
Oh, don't show him that. But that was one of the best Christmas death scenes I've ever witnessed.
Ever seen.
Fantastic, right? So I love your takes. There was no wrong answer here. I'm personally going to go with the fight scene when Santa takes out the kill squad. Cause it to me was the John Wick choreography, the Bryan Adams song playing in the background. I couldn't help but think like I was harkened back
yeah.
to 1997's action thriller Face Off, when bullets were tearing through the apartment and Nicolas Cage's young son was listening to Somewhere Over the Rainbow as people were just getting murdered around him. So I felt that was my favorite kill. But honestly, fellas, that's all I have regarding what has easily become my favorite Christmas movie. Easily has become my third favorite Christmas movie of all time.
Thanks for keeping it under 10, Danko. That was great.
Did I? I timed myself.
Maybe
at 15.
Maybe somebody needs a lesson on sharing at Christmas time. I don't know.
I think I just shared a lot with our listeners.
You just did.
Run, don't walk, and go see this movie.
You did a great job. All right. Our last movie, my selection, was Mistletoe Promise. A nondescript lawyer and a nondescript travel agency co-owner agree to pretend to be boyfriend and girlfriend for reasons that don't require it at all, and then they fall in love. Tell me whether I'm onto something or on something. I really thought it was going to end with the lawyer getting together with his secretary. That really should have been the ending to me, right?
Yeah, you could tell that she was super into him.
Yeah.
And
appreciated granted, him.
Yeah, yes, that she... But I'm also watching actors who probably had only done like community theater, and she might have been overplaying the hand a little bit too much. But yeah, you could see she genuinely liked him for the man he was. She should end up with that guy, and he should end up with her, but travel agents are really sexy people most of the time, so I can understand why they fell in love.
Okay.
I get where you're going with this, but it can't go that way. HR has to get involved. He's going to have to leave that firm. You can't be with your secretary. True. You can't. So I agree. I think it was something that was kind of what happened there. Like there seemed to be a thing. They had some energy between the two of them, but they ran out of money and they couldn't get an HR person involved.
You've never worked in a law firm. A lot of lawyers get together with their secretaries. It ends up being just fine. She would just stop working. Yeah. Oh, it would have been great. She would have just left. I really felt like she liked him a lot better than the other lady did. And so I thought they should end up together. All right. Near the end of the movie, there's a line when Elise, who is the female lead love interest, her friend from work invites her to dinner and says, hey, come to my parents' house. They made duck. This has to be a line added as an inside joke among the writers, right? Because nobody's like making duck anymore and inviting people.
Yeah, inside joke for sure. I don't know. Maybe an homage to a Christmas story when they go and they got to chop the head off the duck, right? Yeah, I don't know.
I've eaten a lot of interesting foods being Arabic in my life, and never once has duck been anywhere on a menu on the Italian side or the Lebanese side. So yeah, I thought... I remember because I was fading in and out at that point. And I was like, what? That bitch just say duck?
All right. So Mistletoe Promise was made in 2016 with no mention at all of LeBron and the Cavs title. Elise and Nick are the romantic leads. Where are Elise and Nick in 2023?
I assume separated or divorced, because there was something about Elise, specifically her eyes. And I didn't know if she was hopped up on speed most of the movie. I didn't know if you guys noticed her eyes darting back and forth the whole film. Yeah. It was so distracting. If they're not separated or divorced, they're the only power couple who often eats at a mall food court. So my guess is maybe they're having some, God, what was the cookie place in malls back in the day that you can get chocolate chip cookies or the cake? What was the name of that place?
What was the name of that place? I can't believe I don't remember.
Was it like something cookie company, maybe? Let's just go with that. Or they're having a lot of hot pretzels. That's all that came to my mind. That's where, in my mind, that's where they're at this point.
The hell was the question?
Where are Elise and Nick in 2023?
I think Nick is the senior partner of a divorce attorney family law firm and doing quite well for himself. And I think he's gotten together with Elise's ex-husband, and they're doing great. They're doing great. Elise, I feel like she's a bit of a what's her name from Ted Lasso. So she's doing her thing, trying to get into marketing and trying to make it work. But I don't think
you just compare Elise to Keely.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's atrocious. Worst take ever.
Elise and Keely have joined forces and they're now promoting European soccer. I don't know.
They're definitely not still together. This was not a match that was ever going to work out. They're both way too lame. All right. Rank them worst to first. This year's holiday movie spectacular choices.
I'm going to go Violent Night first, Noel in the middle, and Mistletoe Promise worst.
Mistletoe Promise is the worst. Noel is not far behind. Violent Night is an actually good, enjoyable, well-produced film with licensed Christmas music in it that made all the difference. So Violent Night is definitely number one.
3 for 3. Hard to do in these circumstances. Mistletoe Promise is terrible. Noel is better, but not great. I really enjoyed Violent Night. I had a good time. It was a lot of fun. Fellas, we are out of time. I am out of questions for now. And we just did the whole show without mentioning that this is going to be our final regular episode of 2023. With that news, that it's been a really fun year. It's been a blast celebrating the holidays. I hope you have a great week, a Merry Christmas, and a rockin' new year. Let's get together and do this again in 2024.
Absolutely.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, happy boys.
Happy new year.
The only other question I had left when we ran out of time was Charlie Woods, Tiger Woods' son, is 14 and had a 320-plus yard drive this week at the PNC Pro-Am. Do you remember the first time you were better than your dad at sports?
I do. Interestingly enough, it was not a sport I excelled at. Because I don't know, we wouldn't challenge each other too much in baseball or football, right?
Like, how do you?
I think I was in seventh or eighth grade and my dad and I were playing one-on-one in our hoop in the backyard, and every shot he took, I just matumbled it right back to his face because he couldn't jump.
So yeah. Just started. What side of the family did you get those long arms from, Denko? It was definitely not Wayne's.
No, I don't know. I guess the Irish side, I have no idea, but,
known for their long arms,
usually
picking potatoes or something. Right. Yeah.
Trying to swim our way out of the bottom of the Titanic. I have no idea. The Italian side was not known for the long arms. I wasn't good at scoring, but I was rejecting every one of his shots, like right back at him. And after, I think I won like 5-0. It was pitiful.
probably like a 2 hour game too.
Oh, it was real good. It was suspended. It was suspended due to darkness.
Like
up the next day. Yeah.
Come on. How about you, Chucky?
Home run contest.
I don't know if we ever. I think we ever did. Well, that's not true. We used to on Thanksgiving, starting in grade school, we would do like the turkey bowl thing, right?
Turkey bowl. Yeah.
We used to do the turkey bowl stuff. And I can remember it was when the father started taking more seriously than the sons that it wasn't much of a challenge anymore, but you actually held back a little bit because you could tell like they love this game. Like they had sweatshirts printed.
Don't ruin their year.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can remember my dad would make, cause he was they had like sweatshirts that said turkey bowl on it. I can remember my dad was probably one of the better athletes on the dad squad. And I can remember him just like making sound effect noises when he had the ball. Like when he jumped, he would go like, swoosh. And I was like, all right. You know, like, I think that was it. I think that was when I passed him by athletically.
Yeah. How about you, Gerbs?
I'm pretty sure it was sometime in high school when I knew like, okay, like you can't throw a ball by me if I'm hitting, you can't beat me in basketball. I'm faster than you now. But I will tell you that graduation day, my senior year of college, I tried to like play fight with my dad, who was a high school and a little bit in college wrestler. And in front of a bunch of girls that we knew and all my college roommates, he picked me up and dropped me on my head like I was a bag of dirt, man. So there were some things I had on him, but he was still my dad. He had that on me for sure.
So can I give you a quick update on local sports talk radio after that last week?
Oh, yeah.
It was so great to listen.
This is what I'm talking about. Like Twitter was just like everybody like ruined by what happened. So yeah, I'm sure radio is the same.
There last week, it was nothing but you trade Donovan Mitchell now. Like you trade him now because you get so much back for the future, as if this season was lost and you're a quarter of the way through it. And I know it sucks to lose Garland and Mobley, but Garland might be back in 4 weeks with like a mask on, you know, and Mobley
helmet,
whatever. And you know, Mobley, again, it's going to be one of those years like, all right, he didn't live up to what we expected, but he'll be okay. It's such a long season. He'll be okay when the games matter. When the games matter against,
I mean, this is the thing. It's
above water, right?
Just get into the playoffs.
Like, that's trade it. Donovan Mitchell right now. Are you kidding? Yeah. That was every
right now.
Every sports talker. So it was that. And the other part of it, which I found, I get it. This I actually agreed with, is basically the take that Joe Flacco is the first franchise quarterback the Browns have had under center since Bernie Kosar. Not that Joe Flacco is our franchise quarterback, in that he is a franchise type quarterback where you could be down two scores in the fourth quarter.
Oh, shit,
and he brings you back and wins, right?
I mean, he was for over a decade. That's
Well, that's what I mean. Like they're saying it as if he hadn't proven himself.
Right.
You know, by winning Super Bowls.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So yeah, that was.
Sorry, man. Deshaun Watson. They keep throwing the Deshaun Watson was 5-1 stat up there, and you're like, well, you know, pump the brakes a little. That Colts game, he only threw like 3 passes, and he looked terrible. They yanked him, and they still won the game. You know, like but legitimately 4-1
Sure.
Deshaun Watson is great. Joe Flacco looked like shit bunch in that game. Now he got the job done.
He looked like shit for 3 quarters and then won the game because our defense kept him in the game, right? So, it was just, hey, man, I love this run with Joe Flacco. Like, I feel like they might win a playoff game with Joe Flacco. I'm going to say it right now. Like, I feel like they could win.
Get them to win them all.
Game. I know. I Super Joe, Super Bowl, right? Like, they had that,
you know, he signed his new contract. And like half of it is weighted to them winning the Super Bowl. And one of my questions was like, why didn't they just go for like the media splash and say they were signing Joe Flacco for $1 billion?
Yeah.
2 million of it could be earned, you know, 998 million of it would be earned if they win the Super Bowl. Who gives a fuck that winning the Super Bowl? You know, it's stupid. Ugh. So were you this into Christmas before Whitney, or is this just something that has come because of her?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I always was, but there were plenty of years here where I didn't set up a tree or anything along those lines. So her love for Christmas is obviously rubbed off on me to where now, like,
we're, that's awesome, man.
We're both pretty big Christmas freaks. Like, you know,
I think that's great because
I think it's great too.
Yeah. Because you grew up in this family that didn't celebrate anything, and it, you know, it was a day off from the salt mine was all you got for Christmas. I'm glad that Whitney has done this for you, man.
I had to have the conversation with my mom because I don't know when it started, probably when I was in like fifth grade. Like, no presents were wrapped anymore. They were just like in bags.
Oh my
gosh. And she was kind of saying, hey, you know, like, I'm like, hey, Ma, can you just like a couple of chips, just a couple of them, wrap them, because he gets it. Like, he wants to do that now.
Yeah.
I don't want you to hand him just like this gigantic hefty bag full of clothes from Kohl's. Like, that's not what he's into. So, but yeah, like it's become a much larger deal because my wife is always right, babe. Like, you've always loved Christmas. Yeah.
See, that's awesome, man. That's fantastic. Yeah, that is good. That's good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, but even before kids, we used to have the like traditional stuff we did, and you know, look at lights and drive around. But we also do it hammered, which is, I don't advocate, but we would.
Three kids, it's okay.
Three kids, it's fine. Yeah,
you know what you got.
We actually saw there's this one tree on the other side of town. It's in somebody's yard. It's a huge tree, and they put like the old fuzzy lights on it. And like our first Christmas together, we took a picture in front of it. And like every year we go visit that tree, and I have a picture with Chip in front of that tree. And now, like,
oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah. Like, that's, there's just good little things that like that, but yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan. I get sad. Like when the lights come down, I like the soft light at night. So it's reminiscent of like the Patriots where like the skill positions just aren't there anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and you can see the frustration with Patrick Mahomes yesterday. You can see him getting super pissed. Their defense has improved, though. But yeah, that's a tough road for them if they're not playing at home. Maybe it's a revenge game for the Browns, and Gerber can finally say it was great that we lost.
Told you guys. I know it's been 3 years, but
the Bills are getting right at the right time. Oh yeah, too, right?
Like,
That team, if they start playing well at the end of the season, can host some playoff games. I'll give them the edge.
Yeah, for sure.
That's the thing. And that's one of those things that, like, the Bills keep winning. Dolphins lose next week to the Cowboys. All of a sudden, the East is tightening up. And in the end, like, you've got – I don't think the Browns are catching the Ravens.
Probably not. They have to win
out. Yeah. But every other division in the AFC might be up for grabs at the end. And that's wild. Wild.
It's fine.
All right. I want to go to bed.
All right. Go to bed.
Yeah. Get better.
Yes.
Get better.
You guys are the best. Have a great Christmas, fellas.
Whatever your side. Yeah.
All my best and all my love to your families. Have a great time.
You too, guys.
Can't wait for Secret Santa gifts and everything like that. And
I have some. I put them under the tree, I think, because I never get any packages other than bills. So, like, hey, these must be my gifts.
Yeah, I know. It was the same here too. Everything comes for Tammy except for the Secret Santa gifts. Yeah. Once a year is the only piece of mail I ever get.
Don't open them. Yeah.
I'm not. I would never. Nice. I would never.
All right.
All right, brother.
All right, man. Boys. Good deal, fellas.
All right. Love you guys.
This was a lot
of
fun.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
What do you mean I'm funny? Funny like a clown? Here to amuse you?